This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Welcome to Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. I'm Pete, and I'm with Johnny. Johnny, man, what is going on, my friend?
Not much. Trust me, everyone. The reason we get to start these shows off in such good moods is sometimes we have conversations that you're never going to hear.
Yeah.
So, just saying. I'm still giggling. I'm sorry. I'm trying to cover still giggling. Yeah, it's three matches, but not really. It's four. Yeah. It's all stretched. That one all stretches together. Yeah, it's this in these three run the gamut.
They really do. They really do, man. And hell, let's get right into the brass tacks, and we'll start off with our first one, and that's Sting versus Jeff freaking Gaylord, July 11th, 1986. When I saw this was running 21 minutes, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I worked on the Death Valley Driver set for this Mid-South section. So I wasn't the leader or one of the main three, but I was like a consultant where I got footage and I'd watch stuff here and there and throw my thoughts online. And they didn't have any really long Sting matches. They had a couple. But 1986 was kind of the year where Watts was feeling a lot more comfortable with Sting as a talent. Because we've seen him teaming with Eddie Gilbert and really, you know, working some long matches with the Fantastics. Bill Watts himself actually worked Sting in a singles match to see what he's made of. Went into the ring. He did like a 15 or 20 minute draw with Terry Taylor. That wasn't bad because Taylor's, you know, decent, pretty solid worker, you know, at the time. You know, you're either a fan of Taylor or you really hate him for the most part.
Let me just tease for later, I took some notes on that. I'm definitely on the pro Taylor side, and when we talk about his match, I'm going to point out why.
Okay, awesome. And so Watts was slowly, and this is something we talk about. We look at before it was NXT, when it was used to be like Ohio Valley Wrestling. You know, you always heard about guys who had a lot of talent, but they weren't there yet. Which was like, you know, like Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton when they first started. But once they went on the road with the WWE, they like immediately improved because they were working 15, 20 minute singles matches on house shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is kind of like, here you go. Honestly, this match wasn't aired for television.
Oh, good.
Okay, it was definitely not ever aired on TV. It was there on the house show to get Sting and Gaylord time in the ring and working together without a veteran in there this time. And I think Watts wanted to see what these guys could bring. And I think 86 was the year Watts was feeling like Sting had a future in this business. And he gave him Jeff Gaylord. And this match was pretty rough. God, when I first saw the 21 minutes, I was scared straight. I mean, like if I was a drug addict, I think I would have quit.
Believe me, that might be the only straight-looking thing about the earlier parts of this match.
Yeah, I mean, this was rough. Ooh. Thank God Eddie Gilbert was there.
Totally.
Because he was getting heat right off the bat and really carrying the stuff outside with his shtick and stuff like that. And it's kind of funny seeing Gilbert there with Gaylord. Have you heard the story about Jeff Gaylord attacking Eddie Gilbert?
No.
Okay. On like one of his shoot interviews when he was the booker for GWF in Dallas, somebody paid Jeff Gaylord to go in, and Gilbert thought he was came in to look for a job, but ends up Gaylord ends up attacking him in the locker room. Someone from another rival Dallas office paid Gaylord to tell you to take Gilbert out. But they were able to. He was able to fend him off, and Gaylord runs off. And years later, he ended up booking him again. And they, you know, explain what happened, blah blah blah. And of course, Gilbert tried to turn it into an angle. But it's just funny seeing young Gaylord here, and 5 years later, in like '91, he would try to attack Gilbert, who was the booker. We get some strength spots early, and hair pull by Sting gets some heat. And I thought Gilbert was great at engaging the crowd at ringside. We get another test of strength, and Gaylord works the arm, but his arm work is just looks really like it looks green as hell working the arm. But the crowd's into it, which is surprising. All the stuff is really basic. We see Gaylord with the hammer lock. Now I did like the snapmare sequence Sting did, where he snapped over Gaylord while he was in the hammer lock, and Gaylord. Well, held on to the hammerlock. It looked really smooth. That was like my favorite spot of the match. Was Gilbert riling up the fans at ringside. So the match actually had heat, but I think 99.9% of it was because of Eddie Gilbert. A nice knee to Gaylord's stomach sets up Sting's heat, which is a chin lock, which is just brutal. I mean, come on. You were selling for most of the match, and now's your time to get heat on Gaylord. And what do you do? Go to a chin lock. That was definitely a rest hold. Clothesline by Sting, followed by an elbow to the throat, and back to the chin lock. You know, he's kind of working like he's like the anti-Ricky Steamboat or Ric Flair here, where they work a headlock and do a spot, and they go back to the headlock, but they're with Sting with Steamboat and Flair, they're actually working the hold. Here, it's just back to sitting in it. Sting with a miss, and Gaylord attacks with some more ugly offense, like, as Jim Ross would say, bowling shoe ugly. Sting back in control, and him and Eddie, they misfire on a spot. On purpose. I mean, it was a planned spot they worked out. But recover, and they cheat a little bit more, and then Sting gets the win. This might have been a star and a half, a star. It was pretty pretty rough. And you can see that Sting was not ready to carry anybody or take not ready to go 20 minutes with another green wrestler. I like when we saw him go 20 with Taylor, it wasn't bad because Taylor was a pretty effective wrestler. So he's there to be he's good enough to be carried at this point, but he's definitely not the guy who's going to be your ringleader at this point in time. And I think Watts probably saw that. But you can see, the evolution of Sting. You see him later on start teaming with Rick Steiner, another green wrestler. But they're both, you know, they're both guys who Watts saw promise in, and they get the push later on. And then later on, in like in the next year before they sold the Crockett, you see Sting working with a lot of different talents, and he was kind of getting groomed a little bit more as a bigger star in Mid-South. And I mean, his crown jewel really was being part of the last Battle of New Orleans, and then he'd end up going to Crockett, and then, you know, then the legend of Sting was made. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts on this thing?
Okay.
But I will say I'm glad I saw it. I mean, it's interesting to track like the trajectory of Sting now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. When I first heard, saw Gaylord, I immediately was like, I don't know anything about Jeff Gaylord. Okay. So, sorry, I got distracted there. There was echo on my earphones for a second. Let me start that again. Remember, every now and then when you have that friend who didn't like wrestling, and he like come into the room or whatever when you're watching wrestling and say something, and it's like, watch this gay shit, you know, or something homophobic. You're like, oh, go fuck yourself. And then looking at all them trying to do their arm work and stuff in the beginning of this match just looks like two young muscle men just writhing around on each other. I was like, yeah, okay. I can kind of see it here.
Really chunky, right? Really.
But I'm just like, oh, they're young. And look, and they're in their tights, and they're all muscly. And they're not obviously not hurting each other at all with any of this shit. That shit went on forever. But I did like the shit with Eddie at the beginning where he's offering Gaylord a deal.
Yes.
He's like, I tell you what, I'm going to offer you a deal, Gaylord. You do whatever. I'm going to offer you a night with one of my girlfriends. And he waves his finger. He's like, don't you get it? I'm the Lord of the Gays. I'm Gaylord. And by the way, Eddie, the Hawaiian shirt with the red suspenders, dreadful. And apparently the Joad family is in the front row for this show. And one more thing about Gaylord, he's wearing yellow tights and yellow boots. So he looks like Rocky from Rocky Horror Picture Show. And they're all chiseled and stumbling around. Oh, man. And with Sting, when it gets to the point where he's in maybe 15 minutes into this match, where he's like finally just body slamming him.
Yeah.
He's like, boom, boom, and being aggressive. And I was like, okay. And, you know, we're getting to this. Why they had to do 20, I don't know. I'm sure it was some sort of lesson or whatever, but holy shit, this wasn't good. But that, like, then you got Eddie Gilbert taking a death bump at the end of it to get a huge reaction out of that crowd. All it took was Eddie getting punched or maiming himself to get that. That's what that crowd, all they gave a shit about was Eddie Gilbert.
Yeah, and you know what? It shows the effectiveness of having a manager because, you know what? I mean, it might help the heat nowadays in some matches if they had a manager out there, outside.
And especially a bumping manager, because Eddie was a wrestler at the time, you know, as well, you know, and he could be a bumping manager. And the last time we've seen anything close to that in the WWF was the dude that was with Del Rio, you know, the only thing even close to it that they've done ever.
Yeah,
I've been in a long time.
Yeah, and you even think about it, even look back to when Daniel Bryan, when he won the title. The crowd was kind of burnt out at that point in Mania, you know, when they saw him for the second time. And in that main event, he got a little quiet there for a bit. But when Hunter and Stephanie came out, they got the crowd really back into it. And that's having an effective heat magnet on outside can really add to it, you know. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, Hunter took a huge bump in the match and Steph, too, if I'm not mistaken. And, it really adds, you know, it really can add to the package, and I really kind of wish, I really miss those type of, having those type of things and stuff.
And one last thing, and you'd think that probably Eddie would be willing to bump around like that, because you've said it, right? He also saw something in Sting and was trying to help him, because he was helping him so much.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And, I mean, even this crowd, I mean, Eddie was able to keep the crowd. The crowd wasn't nuclear or anything, but he made them, you know, react, you know. And 99.9% of it was Eddie Gilbert working the apron, which is just freaking amazing when you think about it.
Because otherwise them fucking hillbillies would have seen right through this shit and fucking just started booing the shit out of it. Because they were a raucous bunch. There was so much in this footage you could hear where you can't make out what's being said, but pick up the tone of it. And there's a lot of just teenage boys cackling and laughing at shit, and chicks screaming and old people booing and shit, where if they didn't have Eddie, they would have turned on this shit, you know, that, you know, the whole, like, well, the South wasn't a smart crowd. No, when stuff looked really bad, the crowd would get on it just as much as anybody else in any other part of the country.
They were very good at catcalling, for sure. Absolutely. Why don't we move over to the next? We'll get rid of that fucking stench, and we'll move over to the next one. And this one's actually from February 2nd, not February 2nd, February 6th, 1987. And it's the Oddball Freebirds of Michael Hayes, Buddy Roberts, and the Angel of Death versus Missing Link, Chavo Guerrero, and Terry Taylor. Well, anyway, what were your insights here, man?
Insights.
I know, I'm being kind.
I'm just going to start talking about the Angel of Death. Angel Death, and I know you think that, man, it's one of the coolest names ever. Sure, I know you do. And you know what? It is. But then you take a look at the fucking guy. And I remember when I was a kid. So I'm thinking I'm about 15 going on 16 when I was watching this as well. And I'm like, oh, this guy's the Angel of Death. I'm like, look at him. He looks like a goober. he's big and gangly. He's got a goober face and mustache.
But he had a sinister mustache, I will say that.
I thought he looked like someone's dad's mustache and a weak chin.
What if they gave The Undertaker the name Angel of Death? I think that would have been a fucking great name for The Undertaker.
Well, there you go. Yeah. But I just remember as a teen, I couldn't buy into him. Like, shouldn't a guy called the Angel of Death look like... do something with that name? Like, look at that. That guy's the Missing Link, and he's grown and shit. Come on, you're the Angel of Death. He looked like just... Yeah, actually, it's so funny. He looks... You know, no one's ever going to get over just bald with a mustache and black tights. But at this point, not this guy. It's the Angel of Death. And I always hated the Oddball Freebirds. Anyway,
I was never a fan of Angel of Death being like... part of him for some, I still don't understand. I guess maybe because Gordy was doing UWF title matches, but I didn't, Angel of Death never, to me, clicked with them at all, you know? I think John Tatum could have fit in here. Bringing Jimmy Garvin over from Crockett could have worked. I mean, there's guys who kind of fit the Freebird mold.
Tatum is a really good pull there because he had just been there.
Yeah, I could easily see Tatum.
He's familiar with the crowd, and it makes sense.
Yeah, I could definitely see Tatum in that role. I mean, there's guys who you could buy into it, but the Angel of Death to me made no sense whatsoever.
Quiet Riot's playing, and Link's coming out, people are popping huge. I love Babyface Missing Link at this time. I dug it. And boy, Dark Journey's in there, tight little dress.
Let me ask you something. Do you think Link was a more effective babyface than he was a heel?
I think so, because he's so fucking goofy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, the Missing Link, and he was never really scary.
He was always limited, too, on what he could do. And sometimes I think that's better for a babyface than a freaking heel.
Yeah, we get all this, like, okay, he's the Missing Link. He's painted green with black around his eyes. He's got a tuft of hair here. What is this supposed to be? It's not an actual Missing Link. Does he think he's a, you know? And it's silly, so I never could take him as a threat, but as a champion for the underdogs who's, you know, just wants to bang his head and he's sort of stupid, you know, and over. That should be over. He's, you know, he's better as a clown than a villain.
And it's small doses, yep.
Yeah. But here's Dark Journey, brother. And she's in a tight dress. And Terry Taylor, at this point, good looking, handsome, confident Terry Taylor, by the way. She is giving him the I'm gonna fuck you eyes, like you can't believe. And he just shoots back this sly glance and a little look, just very, very subtle. That said, and then goes right back, you know, to the task at hand. That just spoke it. It said all that needed to be said. You know, I'll see you later. Right there, man. Terry Taylor's a smooth motherfucker.
One of the biggest rat men of all time in the Houston area.
I know you said, man. And you know why, dude? Because, see, I'll give my Terry Taylor defense right now. We've all heard the stories about his, like, sense of humor backstage, like, people not getting it because it's real subtle. He's real subtle. Everything about him, the way he plays his character at this point, is subtle. He's subtle about everything. It's all little looks and little glances and little sleight of hand things he does with the referee, where he's a good guy. He's kind of a cocky motherfucker. You know, he's got an attitude about himself, and, you know, he carries himself with confidence like a bit of a badass. It's kind of cocky. And that leads into that great heel turn, which is like only a year or so away,
yeah.
You know, where he gets to really do that. But so I always liked Terry Taylor, and he would, at this point, the way he wrestled with that attitude, because he'd cheat too. he was a good guy, but you know, he wasn't above doing a little cheating.
Yeah, I enjoyed Terry Taylor, but he was never my favorite. I always liked him as like a third wheel in a six man tag type of thing, where I know he's a decent worker, so I never really had a problem with him. But I'm not one of those guys who think he was like an incredible worker, but I'm a guy who thinks he's a good, solid hand, and he's a guy I would like to have on my roster because he could work heel, he could be a babyface, he could work tag teams, he could work underneath, you could give him the TV title and he'd be effective in that role too. There's a lot of things he can do. You can work him up and down the card, you can put him on top, you could have him also opening a show. I think he was a very versatile worker, uh-huh. And a very versatile act for any territory.
Well, right.
You know?
But my thing is, like, then I, at this point, I appreciate his work more than most, because nobody does it like that. I'm like, that's different, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, nobody does it like that. And I really appreciate that. But he's never going to be my favorite, because I just think that he's criminally underrated. Because so many people just will, like...
A lot of people just remember from the Red Rooster run.
There's that, and then like, oh, I heard a backstage rumor that he's a real asshole.
Yeah,
you know,
then,
like,
then,
no, whatever.
And then, you know, I mean, he was vocal about not thinking Rollins is ready, and so you have all that stuff that people, you know, and you know, seeing that who are big Rollins fans.
So he's pissing off both sides.
Yeah, exactly, you know.
And he's Terry Taylor, he don't give a fuck. Dude, that's another reason I love him. He don't give a fuck. And
I love him because him and Bobby Fulton now are going to be taking bookings as the Fantastic Ones again, I think is fucking cool as hell.
I'd go see that.
And I still think they'd have a good damn tag match against a lot of.
I'm sure they would. Yeah. You know, to keep it to the basics, I'm
hell
sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would. But so anyway, I'm just going back to. Yeah, that's all I had, because my other shit I want to talk about, the Freebirds, I want to save it for the main event.
Okay.
But it was fun. It was fun. I don't like Angel, and I enjoyed Link, and T'Chava was fired up. It's kind of cool seeing him in Houston as part of the six of the heroes.
Yeah.
On the syndicated Mid-South. Chavo was not anywhere near this level.
No, you're absolutely right.
That was for Houston, so that's kind of neat. But... I think it was fun.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was a fun match. I loved how Hayes and Roberts pretty much didn't allow Angel of Death to do anything in this match. I could have worked this match as an Angel of Death. I mean, anyone could. I mean, he was just there. He was on the apron 99% of the time, and I think he might have taken one bump. I mean, honestly, and that was in this skirmish at the end. Which is ridiculous. You get paid main event money for that. Missing Link, I think Missing Link in six mans is a great way to use him. Because he's over, the character's over, but, you know, he can only do so much in the ring with the headbutt type of shtick. So a six man is perfect for him. I loved Hayes strutting early and his strutting and doing the moonwalk and all that stuff to booze. And then I loved Missing Link does his version of the moonwalk, and the crowd goes bananas. I always say this: good shtick is timeless, you know. And I thought that was really good shtick. I mean, real fun. No one takes a bump. Both guys do a moonwalk, and they get the reactions they need. That's good work. Taylor working Hayes, and he's focused on the arm. A kick by PS brings in Roberts, and he's after Roberts. And then he's after Taylor reverses, and he's after Roberts' arm. Chavo's in. He picks up working the arm of Roberts. Hayes back in, and Chavo's on his arm. Chavo's looking pretty damn good here. I like Link comes in. He starts biting Roberts. I thought the faces had a pretty long shine here. I mean, it went pretty long. Like it was like, come on, man, wait for the Freebirds to start getting some heat. And it looks like Link is going to go face Imperil, but he gets tossed outside and gets roughed up a bit. Link is bleeding. They're working the cut. So now when they're finally getting their heat, I'm liking it. I just felt it was a little too long on giving the faces the shine. Robertson eats, and then the comeback was pretty quickly, where they didn't get enough heat. Roberts eats a big headbutt. Chavo gets the hot tag. Sunshine interferes. And then I loved Dark Journey's revenge spot. She did the exact spot Sunshine did, except to the heels. And then, we get this breaking down at the finish, and the heels steal a pin on Taylor. Good solid six-man tag, 2 and 3/4 stars. Again, I just wish the shine was cut off a little bit, and we would have got the heat done a little bit more. But then again, if we got the heat, maybe Angel of Death would have had to work a little bit more. So we have that problem. But hey, on that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back. And we're back, and we're going with the final match, which is kind of like two matches. And it starts off with, what we ends up getting starting off is, we'll break them up into two segments. How about that, Johnny?
Okay.
All right. And the first one is, we get this Terry Taylor versus Buddy Roberts TV title match from July 11th, 1986. And I thought this is what we get here is we get this match that ends up breaking down into a six-man tag, kind of doing like what we've seen a lot in the Houston footage, is they have a match that leads into another match, which is kind of becoming a Houston staple. What'd you say about that, Johnny?
Yeah, you know, ECW, they ripped you off.
Yeah. Well, why don't you talk about the match first, the TV match?
Super heated. At some point, just one guy, he starts chanting USA, USA, and I had to fucking laugh my ass off. It was just like, USA! I'm like, what? Yeah, the free version for Georgia. It's, what are you doing? And Terry's not a pussy, because they're doing the tied up in the rope spot. And Terry's tied up in the ropes. Buddy gets in a little, but he gets out, and he gets Buddy tied up in the ropes, and he just lets him fucking have it. And then the referee is just like, the referee's giving a whole like, okay, a little bit of leniency because he did it to you, but okay, that's enough, Terry. Okay, we're good. We're square. And Terry's like, yeah, we are. Yeah, no, yeah, we are. Referee turns. He immediately goes in for the kill again. Just pop, 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 pop. Fucking a Buddy. The ref's like, motherfucker. And he's like, hey, what? You know, I fooled the ref. I was like, ah, that's slick. It was really slick. And at one point he's being pinned, but his tights are being pulled. And the referee's doing three count, and he and Kevin, so he's stopping the ref's count with his hand. He's grabbing him. The ref's like, hey, don't do that. And he's like, then going to take the time to point behind him with his hand. Like, he's pulling my tights. And the ref goes to do it again. He stops him again. And he's like, he's pulling my tights. And he sees him pulling the tights. He's like, oh, that was really cool, too. A cool little spot. And the last thing I want to just mention before we get into the fucking explosion is, and then I want to hear, of course, what you have to say. Buddy, I remember, you remember too, when the Freebirds get brought into UWF, and I'm like, they're not doing tag team work, really. You know, it's like Terry's the singles champion, and Buddy is the TV champion, and Hayes, wrestle, you know, and I'm like,
And I remember first commentary.
Commentary, yes, exactly. Hayes was doing commentary, where you so you got to hear him all show with Ross, which by the way was like real at the time was like was my favorite announced name. And at the time, I remember being like, "Oh, Buddy Roberts, singles guy." I was like, "Oh, and why are they doing it that way? They're splitting up the tag team, and you know." And my thinking went that way. And I think it meant more to Watts to take a guy like Buddy Roberts that he knows and at least respects as a worker, you know, not as a person or whatever. But and he goes, "No, we're gonna put the mid-level belt on him, and he can be a heat magnet for that." And have really good matches with these guys. Because the more I watch them, I'm like, oh, these matches are really good with Buddy. He's really good. So UWF, I think, legitimizes Buddy Roberts as a singles wrestler. Because of the way Watts booked him, which I think is kind of neat.
Yeah, and he had an opportunity to work. I want to say, like, better wrestlers. I mean, we all know
they're better. I'm going to tell you better. Of course better than world class. Okay?
Yeah. Come on. They worked, he's working Iceman Parsons. He's working the Von Erichs and singles. He was always kind of pushed as kind of like the comedy. He was the
more comedy.
Yeah. For him. But here he had a little bit more edge to him in world and in UWF. And Watts definitely presented him better. And the band would get to back together. And they also, the natural rivalry is they just didn't have, like, the brothers. Like, they had it against Von Erich. That's why they drew so much money with the Von Erich, because of the three-on-three dynamic. It's just not the same as the babyfaces here. Yeah, they're great babyfaces, but it's just not the same dynamic as three brothers, because the Freebirds, you know, preach family, too. So it's almost like a brothers versus a brother's feud, you know?
Right, right. And by the way, there's, when we get to the next thing, there's a tiny bit of storytelling done between Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy that works the whole, okay, we're brothers angle, but still manages to get in just a little bit of cowardice to heat the crowd. And it's genius.
Yeah. And you know what? These guys really have a good history of having good matches with each other, Taylor and Buddy Roberts. And that was one of the things when we were watching a lot of footage for the Death Valley Driver set, was how much more polished Roberts looked here in UWF. And it's because, you know, he's working with better, more fluid workers than getting potatoed by Kevin Von Erich.
Well, and also the fact that, how many matches can you have with us?
Yeah, I agree. Being on, I was on the World Class Committee as one of the three guys, and there's only so many. It's cool for a comp to watch Von Erichs, but watching Von Erich main event after main event after main event gets old, especially against the Freebirds constantly, and it got old. I mean, that was a big feud in '83. Part of 84, part of 86, they flip it around in 88, that was a feud that people talk about how the NWO got stale. The Von Erichs Freebird feud got stale. I mean, there is only so much you could get out of that, and you've seen one match, you've seen them all, which is fun while brawling, but sometimes,
they were filling spaces between storytelling.
Yeah.
As they're stretching it as far as they can until they have to do something different.
Yeah.
And because the first one, it felt like, when the feud first started, it felt like there was sort of an ending when
the cage
match with Fritz gets the revenge.
Yeah, and then,
on Hayes.
And then the other guys would then, that ending was incredible. And then you get the loser leave town tags, where the guys would end up losing town, the other guys. And but then the feud recycles.
Recycles.
We bring Lance Von Erich is in, and Mike's in.
And even in the old great stuff, it was because World Class was one of those wrestling shows that put good matches on their free TV. Yeah. So you're going to see a lot of singles variations between these people.
Yeah.
And look, here's Mike, you know, and you're like, okay. Storyline is going on a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I think our friend Good Helmet, put out, I think it was like a 15 disc Freebirds.
I love it.
Love it. But that's how much that's how much footage is available. And that's not just, there's no squash matches on that damn comp.
I'll tell you, you were a part of the Texas set, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You guys did a great job with your selections, because I like went through that set like a can of Pringles. So you did a good job picking out all the gems.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what it is. It was a lot of roughness. I mean, so when Eric Embry came on board later on, it was so exciting because the TV became something different than Von Erichs versus Freebirds but when you had the Freebirds for a while, they were good they were good heels. Then you had Adams and Gino, they were good heels. One Man Gang was a good heel, but then when they got to Matt Bourne and
Buzz Sawyer,
it just—I mean, they're good heels. Don't get me wrong.
Oh no, but it just
But it did not work in World Class whatsoever.
Black Bart.
Yeah, And then they move over to the Black Bart era, which didn't work. Brian Adidas didn't have nearly the, it was pretty much the same exact angle, or, you know, as the Chris Adams turn.
Yeah, no, they just tried to redo the Chris Adams turn with someone no one cared about.
Yeah, no one cared about it. It was planned, and it was always an underneath wrestler. And then his partner was Al Madrill. Ugh. I mean, there was a lot of bad wrestling, a lot of bad stuff that happened.
Anyway.
But it was back to the match here. I enjoyed it. Robert's eating this punch, and immediately he's taking a powder, getting heat, get some back and forth. And I'm like, I love Robert's tying Taylor in the ropes and beating on him. A kick by Taylor causes a little separation. And then in a nice revenge spot, Taylor ties Roberts into the ropes. I thought he could have milked the revenge spot for a bit longer, where I thought they went to it a little quickly, as opposed to, I thought Taylor, you know, how they always, the guy could always look out and play to the crowd and like, should I kick him? Should I kick him? I thought they could have milked that a little bit better, but they didn't.
He was playing it. He was playing it cool, like the Fonz, because he was going to fool that ref.
Yeah, but still. Finally, the ref unties Roberts, and Taylor goes for the cross body, but he misses Roberts and hits the rope. This sets up Roberts' heat, and he's taking a time, and he's measuring his shots. The crowd's trying to rally Taylor. Robert goes to the top without causing enough damage, and Taylor catches him and makes a comeback. He has a decent one for a bit, but Roberts cuts him off, only for him to mess it up again. Then it breaks down, and it's the Freebirds battling Taylor, Watts, and Chavo. I thought the Taylor Roberts section was a good solid 2.5 stars, but then this is the coup de grace comes on, and it's just a big fight, and it's 3-on-3, a lot of brawling. They can't get the match to go, get started. It's just a lot of pretty hate filled. The big baby face is standing tall versus the nasty heels.
Bullshit.
Finally, it settles down into a match. And we see Gordy just bumping early. Big early. Hayes and Taylor are at it. Gordy in to inflict some pain. The big, you know, he's the heavy hitter. He's the cleanup hitter. Roberts is continuing the beatdown. And he's like, you know, he's measuring his shots again, calculating. Hayes is in, and the crowd is rallying behind Taylor. I like that Taylor's the face in peril coming off of this match after he just had, like, you know, a 12 or 13 minute match with Buddy Roberts. So it makes perfect sense that Taylor's the most tired of them all, and that he is the face in peril here. And he's been real solid in that role. Hayes eats the boot, and we get the hot tag that the ref doesn't see. I'm a mark for that spot, because he gets nuclear heat every time if it's done even half-ass, and they do it really well here. Finally, it breaks down to a free-for-all, and Cowboy Bill Watts, he just hits a shoulder block on Taylor by mistake, and Taylor takes a huge bump to the outside. Gordy and Hayes are trying to injure Watts, but they misfire. Match is thrown out as Watts is just dropping people with brass knucks. Yeah, super heated affair. Gordy, you know, hey, we're going to bleed for the boss. Blades like a motherfucker bleeding on the outside post-match.
You don't make me bleed.
Yeah. Really good, fun six-man, full, real spirited. I believe this made the Death Valley set, but we didn't get the Roberts match to begin it, which even adds to this, you know, which really adds to the story that we missed, because all we got on the house show was this breaking down at the end. We just thought it was like an angle. We didn't know there was a match involved. And totally pretty real fun 3.5 star six-man tag full. It was a real good, you know, good give and take brawl. I enjoyed the hell out of it. What about you, man?
Oh, it's fucking awesome. But my favorite part was the fight leading into the match. By far, that was because, you know, Hayes just jumps in the ring, you know, just to start beating the shit out of Terry Taylor, and they all come running out one at a time. You know, doing that shit, and Gordy's out. And Watts, here comes Watts. And for a second, the Freebirds get to kick the shit out of the old man, and I was cheering like a motherfucker. I always cheered the Freebirds beating up the old man character. I loved it. I loved it in World Class.
Yeah, I loved it here.
I loved it because I was on their side. I was always on their fucking side.
But the best thing about the old man is the Freebirds, they get some heat. But good God, when the old man made his comebacks, they would sell like a motherfucker.
Of course. But you see, when I was at this age, I understand, you know, every promotion had the old man in character, you know, pretty much. You had Bruno in WWF, and you had Vern in AWA.
Yeah, Fritz,
and
Bill.
Fritz, yeah, you know, you had him every.
Larry Hennig, yeah, definitely.
And I was I always liked that. I always was a fan of it, but there were certain characters that I was like, I don't like you. And I never liked Fritz or Bill Watts. I didn't find them likable people on TV.
Okay.
That was me. I don't like you. And that's always tempered by the fact that, I mean, hell, I cheered when Eddie covered fucking Ferry of the fucking Russian flag. So what can I say? But it's tempered by a love of the Freebirds I have. That is, we talked about, you know, their brothers is, I've always loved, number one, I thought they were fucking cool. The Freebirds were fucking cool. They're entertaining. They partied like fucking rock stars, you know, and shit. You know, I thought that was badass. And they didn't take any shit. And they were brothers, but because they chose to be brothers. And my two best friends growing up, we had a relationship like that, minus all the fighting. Okay, there was fighting, just only one of us ever was always fighting. Our Gordy would be fighting. Our buddy Jack and Jimmy would just be getting high somewhere while Gordy would be fighting. That's pretty much our dynamic. And we've been best friends since the fourth grade and still are. So you add that with the Freebirds, I think being fucking cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm always on their side, especially against, I'm like, yeah, anti-establishment. Fuck you, old man, and your old ways. You don't understand rock and roll. Love them.
Yeah.
Especially against me, and I liked the Von Erichs, but especially against the Von Erichs. I'm like, oh, you're the wholesome, all-American, a bunch of phonies.
You're so fucking Philadelphia. It's fucking ridiculous. Oh, God.
I'm a realist.
I would hate you. I love the Freebirds. I would have hated going to a show with you. Oh, God.
I love the Freebirds. But at certain points during this match, you hear someone really breathing heavy near the hard microphone. And I was like, Pete, is that you? Because I thought you were just going, oh, yeah, this is the best. Because this was just fucking hardcore Mid-South. There's your old man. You know, I don't like your old man, but you like your old man. Hell, and there's your old man in there kicking those hippies' asses.
That's right.
That was another thing. I was like, yeah, you know, they're hippies. Of course I'm on their side. But there was a little bit where Hayes pretty tag out. And Hayes kind of runs away from the tag. And Terry gives him this look that just screams, dude, what the fuck? And Hayes goes, oh, yeah, and tags himself in. And I'm like, oh, that's so subtle, great storytelling. It tells the brotherhood, but the crowd can still jeer at it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's fucking good stuff. And you have to be brothers in real life to pull that shit off.
Yeah.
That's why they can do it. And then at the end, I'm like, okay, Mr. Big All-American, knocking everyone out with your fucking brass knucks. You're a fucking cheater. You're a cheater. Boo. It's like the Southern sheriff beating up hippies.
Sheriff Buford.
Sheriff, what's his name? From Walking Tall.
Yep.
Buford Pusser.
Yep.
I just like, yeah, I like Smokey and the Bandit a lot better.
True.
but boy, Jesus, Gordy was covered in blood, especially like you said, because at the end of the match, he just hits a gusher at the end of the match and it goes back. And that's what he's screaming. And I'm picturing it in Gordy voice. He's like pointing, he's like, you don't make me bleed.
Yeah.
Like, ah, that's awesome. Because he's being scary and running away at the same time.
That's one thing that, like, a lot of the people on the Greatest Wrestler Ever poll was saying that Gordy's stock has dropped in their eyes. But, man, yeah. I'll tell you, that Mid-South run, I think, is an epic run where it's like...
It's oh, incredible. So do I.
Where you're just churning out great title defenses and great tag matches and...
I'll tell you,
by far the MVP of that damn promotion, you know.
Oh yeah, and I'll tell you, at the time, I was appreciating the matches, but I it was so programmed into, he's half of a tag team.
Yeah.
Why is he the singles champ? That used to get on me when I was a kid. I don't know, you know, it's stupid.
No, I know. But, I'm with you. I remember when something that always drove me nuts was. And I ended up, I mean, we're looking back at their work now, I enjoyed it. Oh, but what yeah. is happening at the time, I was not a big fan of, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin when he was teaming with Pillman as the Hollywood Blondes. I was like, man, Austin's a singles wrestler. Why is he, you know, I thought he was, like, slumming it. I always felt he was slumming it. And it bothered me, like, you know, why? Why? It's kind of the same way here with the Gordy, you know?
Yeah, it's the flip, the but yeah. It's a, yeah, and then you go back and look at it, and like, oh, they were doing such great stuff.
Yeah.
But when you're a kid, it's just the things that, you know, especially those of us who, like, read the magazines or it's hardcore into it, you know, and to this day, we're a bunch of stubborn people. So, you know, looking back on it, you're right, like, you say, like, people are like, well, you know, some of the Japanese stuff is overrated and this and that, and maybe so, but this run here, he's fucking great, man.
Great
he's unbelievable. Everyone.
And Doc and Taylor and Duggan and One Man Gang. I mean, all different types of workers having just great, great matches against him.
And even the booking of the storyline makes more sense to me now that I get it. It's that because they did the whole, like, you know, we signed the Freebirds for $1 billion, you know, and so they're coming in like they own the place because they have these negotiated contracts that kind of give them some power.
Yeah.
that's such great little storytelling and all that. So no wonder they go, well, let's not worry about the tag teams. We're going to split up. We could cover more ground. Hayes, look at him. He's in the commentary booth. The Freebirds are all over this show. It's theirs.
Yeah, they almost made him like a version of the Four Horsemen in a way.
A little bit. Like, but they, yeah. or, you know, that's how, hey, NWO, that's how you take over a promotion.
Yeah.
At least briefly.
Exactly. At least
briefly. And get paid for it.
Oh, man, that's awesome.
But crowd was nuclear. Awesome.
Yeah, exactly. I love Houston wrestling, and I love Mid South. I think Mid South might be my favorite promotion of all time.
It's one of my. I mean, it's for the longest time when people would ask, I would say Mid South UWF, and this was like before any footage was available.
Right.
So it was one of those nerd things. Where like, yeah, you don't know what you missed, bro. You know? Because I wasn't around tape traders.
Right.
You know, and. So I'm so glad, you know, there's so much of it to see. I mean, I flip-flop back and forth between this and Memphis, you know, of my two. Everyone associates me with being a WWF guy. But my two favorite promotions were Memphis and this run of World Class, of Mid-South / UWF. Loved this.
Yeah.
You know, right around when I started watching it, a lot of the stuff I've caught up on, right up to the Crockett buyout one, then I was kind of like, eh, you know, okay. And what happened? But that run was definitely one of my favorite runs ever of a promotion.
Agreed, man. Totally agree. And yeah, I mean, that's the thing about territories. I mean, it's so cool that you can go back and revisit all these different stuff because every territory had a different type of vibe to it and a different flavor in a way, you know, like this had. Like Memphis was great on the promos and had these wild angles and wild stips. Here, Mid South was a blood and guts promotion with big brawlers, you know, big beefy wrestlers. While you had the Carolinas, which were a more faster paced product, but had but also had good angles and promos too. But everything was different. You know, AWA was more mat based and more you know, not as
dull.
Yeah, I was gonna say, okay,
dull.
Not as angle driven and promo driven. But you had you know, you had Nick Bockwinkel as the freaking ace of the promotion. So you know, everything had a you know everything.
The presentation was just.
Yeah, I know. You know, and then you know the WWF was a little cartoony. It could appeal to kids, but it also had a place for adults too. You know.
Yeah, but for me, I think the thing with Memphis is the storytelling aspect is I appreciate that shit so much. I'm like, man, how do you keep this shit going?
Yeah.
Like, keep it going. And just TV, the way the TV works, I'm just like, this is genius in a way. I mean, as far as studio wrestling goes, if I'm just going to go by the studio wrestling,
I just watched
Memphis over and over and over again, because I was like, Dave Brown, Lance Russell, I like the flow of this show, you know, and everything. I watched so much of it in a row. But when I'm in the mood for big, giant, beefy motherfuckers, you know, 300 pounders throwing each other around, I'm going Vince up.
Yeah, you know, like a studio show is really cool, but there's something about a live, you know, arena setting, which what Mid South, ended up turning into, you know.
And that was their thing too, that Mid South did, like we mentioned, like World Class did, is their TV show had all good matches. You know, there wasn't no jobber matches, pretty much. You know, there'd be just like Savannah Jack maybe versus someone higher on the card, but there was no like just loser matches. So we always gravitated towards that shit.
Yeah,
you know, me and my buddy grew up on WWF, and we're just like, oh, are they allowed to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now it's commonplace.
Okay.
On that note, man, we'll call it a night. Everyone, thanks for listening. Johnny, anything you want to mention? Anything, plugs?
No.
How's the play doing?
It's going good. Going good. Get a little stressful with the choreographer, but that's a story for another podcast.
All right, there we go. And check us out. The three of us will be, two of us will be joining Kelly, and we're going to talk about some Bruno Sammartino. We're not going to go over everything on the network, but we're going to go over a lot of what was posted up recently put on the collection site. So we'll be getting the part of the band back together.
Are we allowed to call it a reunion? I mean, it's 2/3. I mean, you
know. Well, we got to find out. We're the new titans.
A new never works in wrestling. You know that.
Yeah, I know.
New never works.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, reunion. So we'll keep an eye out for that. It should be dropping sometime next week, I want to say. We'll have a great week, guys, and we'll see you next week. Later.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden, king of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night. I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecasts in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes. The Kai is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red Shoes Dugan, holding his arm high, all out of breath. I hated all of Chavo's enemies. I would pray nightly for their death, descending like fire.